KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Oakland.
Nob Hill.
San Leandro.
Petaluma.
Midtown Terrace.
Inner Richmond.
I live in Berkeley.
Coming up, we'll meet a candidate for mayor who wants to use revenue bonds to make San Francisco the greenest city on earth.
A lot of what we hear from City Hall is incrementalism, shell games, distraction. I'm not talking about that.
The future according to Joel Ventresca. Then our partners in California prisons are coming out with a new series.
You know, mainly I like to present stories that show that people are making good use of their time to change. It reflects on who I am and my drive, trying to make something out of this time that I've been wasting in prison.
It's Uncuffed, made in California prisons. Hear the debut coming up on Cross Currents. Election Day is 2 weeks away in San Francisco, and the city's top office is up for grabs. We've been interviewing candidates for San Francisco mayor. Today, Joel Ventresca. He's a longtime San Francisco City resident who's a retired airport analyst. He's run for public office before and bills himself as the most progressive candidate in this race. He says he wants to make public transportation free. He wants to open up a new United Nations in the Presidio dedicated to climate change and use renewable public power to make the city carbon neutral within a decade. How will he pay for it? Revenue bonds. KALW's Ben Trefney sat down with Joel Ventresca to hear more about his vision.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about your platform then. One that really catches my attention is that you want to reinvent San Francisco as the first zero carbon emissions international city in the world. How are you going to do that?
Yes. The city and county of San Francisco is well positioned to set up a full service public power, consumer owned electric utility that relies on renewable energy alone with batteries, meaning solar, wind, hydroelectricity, and geothermal.
To store the energy.
Right. And we need the batteries to store it, you know, during the evening. But we can do generation, create new generation, like putting solar panels on roofs. We can have solar farms in the region. The San Francisco Water Department owns a huge amount of land throughout the region. We can put up solar power plants and bring the power into the city. So what I want is 100% renewable clean energy being brought to the city or generated in the city, and the city consumers and the city government would own the system free of all the corruption from PG&E.
So you have said that you would have a comprehensive homeless program as well. You'd end poverty on the streets. How would you go about that?
Okay, I'll give you some of the objectives. One objective is 100% on demand, 24 hours. If a person needs a shelter out of the elements, I'll guarantee they have it. This nonsense that we leave 1,000 to 5,000 people out in the elements every night, that ends. Okay, so anybody who wants to come out of the elements and have a shelter bed that's safe and secure and monitored, I will guarantee that they will have it. I will use public land and public facilities, and I may use tents or bigger tents, but every space, and I will distribute it throughout the city because it's a common issue related citywide, and I want everybody to participate in the solution. Okay, and this
idea— So you might put up tents in parks or things like that in order to accommodate
yes.
people.
Yes, and in 1906, when we had a humanitarian crisis after the earthquake, we did exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm prepared to do that on a short-term basis, but that's one thing. If you need a shelter bed, I'm going to make sure you have a shelter bed. Number two, I'm going to provide a 24-hour, on-demand substance abuse counseling that gets you into a program off the streets if you want to break your addiction. You know, I would have effective homeless services where people can have a small space for storage that's secure. They can have access to email and phone and mail. And when they access services, we identify them so we can differentiate between people who have different challenges. And then we try to get them into a program, 2 or 3 years, where people are coming in and coming out at the end of a three-year period. And if they heal, they get better, they break their substance abuse issue, I'll make sure they have a government job, $20 an hour. As an incentive, because the city has a lot of work to do, and I want to put people to work. You know, maybe installing solar panels on the east side of the city, on 85% of the roofs.
Another one of your platform points is to halt what you call the Manhattanization of San Francisco. So what does that mean, and then how would you stop it?
Okay, well, a lot of people from New York and Manhattan, they've come to San Francisco, and they want to turn San Francisco into the new Manhattan because it's a gold rush. You can make a fortune for the 1%. You know, they want to line high-rises around Golden Gate Park, like the high-rises are around Central Park. Okay, well, it's not going to happen if I'm elected mayor. I will stop the increasing density of commercial office high-rise construction. The Salesforce Tower should have never been built. I mean, it's an outrage that that was built. And that was because prior mayors, you know, was letting the downtown business community drive public policy. But the Salesforce Tower should have never been built, or similar towers like it. If I'm the mayor, I will stop Manhattanization. You know, I will significantly increase production for housing, but and I will make sure that half of the new housing is affordable for low, moderate, and middle-income people.
So what you call Manhattanization, I mean, I know that there have been zoning laws that have been changing around the transit corridors, for example, say along Judah in San Francisco, to try to make buildings 5 stories or up to 7 stories if it's 100% affordable housing. So are you talking about housing or building that is at that level or higher in different areas? And that ostensibly is for housing, which would help to relieve some of the pressure on housing. So how do you jibe these things?
Okay, what I would do is I would encourage home sharing for the elderly. So if you had elderly people that are compatible, they can share a home. If they want to put a secondary legal unit that meets code that's under rent control in the garage, that's a single unit, I'll go for that. If they want a cottage in the backyard, housing there. And also, whenever there's a corner in a residential neighborhood, you have the building facing one street on the corner, and then the other side of the street is the backyard. Okay, well, that backyard, I'm open to doing infill housing. You could fit two to four studios right there with their own exit, you know, where they're getting the bus to go to work. So I would increase that. But in the neighborhood commercial areas, I would go 5 stories, but you get to the 5 stories if you do this configuration. You do 2 levels underground. The ground floor is neighborhood serving, retail serving businesses to increase traffic to help the nearby businesses. So that's ground floor. The next floor, I want commercial space, half for nonprofits. We subsidize their rent so they stop getting displaced. And the other half can be architects, lawyers, and engineers. And on that floor, I want a communal office center so the economies of scale, you know, and all the equipment that we rely on, all the businesses can benefit from that, plus a conference room. So you can save money and have more space for nonprofits and for small businesses, which I want to encourage. And then the 3rd, 4th, and 5th floor, if you make sure that 50% is permanently affordable housing for low, moderate, middle-income people, then we'll let you go 5 stories in these areas, but no more. And then on the roof, you're going to have a community garden. Mm. Okay, now we could build hundreds of those.
So I'd like to conclude with what we call a lightning round, which is going to be really quick answers on different topics of the day for both San Francisco and then kind of, you know, on a more global scale. So if you could just listen to the keyword that I say here and then keep your answers short. It could be one word. It could be no more than a sentence. Okay.
Okay.
So I'll bring up some things. So we'll begin with ride sharing.
Unintended consequences.
The cost of housing in San Francisco.
Highest in the nation.
Social media.
Freedom, liberty, and privacy are the same thing. And the Silicon Valley media companies or social media, they are failing and they are leaning towards massive surveillance, and they're actually not empowering the individual to be engaged in fruitful activities.
Donald Trump.
I think it's outrageous that we have a reality TV show host as president of the United States. I think it's an abomination. And I hope whoever the Democrats nominate that he can be defeated so we don't have to deal with his nonsense for another 4 years. But also all of his views about global warming is just complete denialism. It's not based on facts or science. It's just an outrage that the top executive in the U.S. Doesn't understand the science of global warming.
Gavin Newsom.
Bailout for PG&E.
Climate change.
the most important issue that every single human being in every single country on the planet should focus part of their day on trying to help resolve.
Joel Ventresca is running to be mayor of San Francisco. He spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. That interview was produced by Joshua Sirotiak. And we're covering all the candidates. Check out who we've spoken with so far at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. If you're a regular listener, you know that KALW's been making radio with people in prisons for a number of years. But now, for the first time, the producers inside are hosting their own show where they introduce and discuss the stories they record. Plus, it'll feature stories from both Solano and San Quentin State Prisons. It's still called Uncuffed, and now you can find it in any podcast app. We'll get you started. Now we're proud to present Uncuffed, Episode 1.
We are speaking to you out of a room with a couple of windows and white tarnished paint, and we got posters up with KALW. We got a poster of a drawing by Brian Timms. And what I want to say is that this is a place that is better than any cell we could be in right now. And we are coming to you to share Uncuffed so that you can see and feel what we see, feel and hear. And hopefully, we could bring you here to keep you out there. This is Uncuffed from KALW, recorded and produced by people in California prisons. My name is Spoon Jackson. On this show, you will hear stories from producers at both Solano State Prison and San Quentin State Prison. Today, you are here with us, the fellas of Solano. What's up, cats?
What's up, Spoon?
Hey, Spoon.
Hey, well, right. That's Brian Timms. Tell the listeners about this show.
We record stories with other people in prison. We have long conversations and edit them down for you. For a while now, we've been airing them on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. Now, we're presenting them in a new format where we're the hosts.
This is Joe Kirk here. I'm another one of the producers at Uncuffed. And I just want to let you know, we all come from different walks of life. Some of us are urban, some of us are from the desert. Some of us are country bumpkins. Well, I think Steve is, I don't know. But we all have our different styles, different stories we like to do. Some of us like to do happy stories. Some of us like to do serious stories. Some of us like to do, mind-bending stories. Today we're going to hear a story from Brian Mazza.
That's me.
Brian, can you talk about the kind of stories you like to do?
Mainly I like to present stories that show that people are making good use of their time to change. Art, music, redemption, recovery, that's where I come from.
Why?
It reflects on who I am and my drive in life, trying to make something out of this time that I've been wasting in prison.
Yeah, so Brian, can you kind of set it up for us?
Yeah, sure can. Twin, I didn't meet him in the flesh right away. I heard the story about him. He was working on the yard crew, and they were trying to move this chunk of concrete, the whole crew. And they called Twin over, and Twin picked up this chunk of concrete, threw it in the back of the truck, and moved it all by himself with the strength of five men. I'm thinking, man, you never want to cross this guy because it just sounds scary, right? But then, a little bit later on, I heard this youngster, big kid, playing this music over by the circle, and it was so beautiful and peaceful that it just caught me right away.
Do you have a name for this story?
Yeah, it's Skyboy. Twin is his street name, and Skyboy is his artist's name.
Let's get to the story, to the magic, to the realness of the piece. It will blow you away.
How does Remus Sam Lange, a Pacific Islander in prison for life, adopt his Tongan ceremonial tradition to compose a remorseful song of healing?
I stole her sunshine.
Malolele.
Malolele.
How are you today?
Saibe. Saibe.
Tell me about your last name, Langi.
My last name, it goes back as my grandpa's grandpa. The chief had told my ancestor to build him an estate in downtown Nuku'alofa. And then my ancestor replied back and told him and said, I'll build my estate in the heavens. Thai chief told him, like, well, what about your descendants? What about those after you? What will they inherit? My ancestor told him, they will inherit the heavens. Yeah, I'm an inheritor of heaven, you know.
Would you mind sharing what happened that night?
It was December 21st, 2002. A friend of mine invited me to come out to a barbecue that was thrown at night. It was a nighttime barbecue. And then after the barbecue, we drank. There were other group of gentlemen that was outside across the street. Altercation took place. And the police got there and we all arrested and stuff. And then I didn't realize it was serious till we got to the county jail. And they told me that you better hope this guy wakes up, man. And I was like, what? I don't remember. I don't remember it being that serious, man. The family decided to pull his plug on Christmas Day, and my charges changed from attempted murder to homicide.
Okay, talk to me about your victim's family.
They was always showing up to my court dates, you know.
You were well aware of the impact that you had on that family.
Yeah.
So talk to me one day. You're talking to your brother. Tell me about that.
Man, it was crazy, man, when I had to translate for Dad, man. My own dad was apologizing to the family. My dad don't speak English, you know. And he said something about, even though my son is going to prison, you know, I'm still fortunate in the sense that I can still talk to him, you know. When he told me that, it made sense for me because when I look back, there was a period where the victim's family stopped showing up.
So whatever your dad told them?
My dad's apology, I believe it came off across as, you know,
your victim's family stopped coming to court.
Man, they stopped showing up. They didn't even come for trial. They didn't even come for the sentencing. They just...
They started healing. What your dad told them started the healing process for them.
I believe that... Back in the Polynesia, like if a party even kills another party, right? Before the sun rises, they go and they wear a bulo, like a tapa cloth, and they sit in the front of the victim's family's house, right? The family can do whatever they want to do with them. They can kill them, they can retaliate, they can do whatever they want to do. And if not, the family will come out and forgive them. That's exactly what my dad did.
You're still writing music, and most of your music had negative connotations to it.
Growing up in the neighborhood I grew up in is going through the juvenile hall system and stuff. Like, raps was like how we kill time.
Tell me about what happened when your sister comes to visit you.
She asked me, hey, man, so I'm hearing from Vailea and them and all your nephews that you've written so many songs, you know, all you do is write songs. And I was like, yeah, I got a lot of them. Well, sing me one of your songs. Let me hear one of your songs. And I was going through which song would be appropriate, you know, to sing for my sister. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't think of one.
Because of what?
Because of the content of the songs, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like the taboo is... we can't swear when we're around each other. We can't, I can't be in her room. She can't be in my room. We can't even watch TV together.
So you didn't, you weren't able to share any of your music with your sister at that point in time?
None.
Tell me what happened after that, with your creativity, that is, what you wanted to do.
She tells me, it was a turning point for me. She tells me that, you can't sing one song, huh? It's like, nope, I can't. I said, why? She said, like, up, it. Meaning, swear words, huh? It's like, yup. And she tells me, man, why don't you write a song that when I hear it, I'll be proud to say that you're my brother. Or if your nieces hear the songs, that they'll be proud to say that you're their uncle, you know what I mean? Sing beautiful songs. And that kind of like sparked this whole thing for me, that I had never written my letter of remorse. And I go to what's natural for me, you know what I mean? Like
the music.
The music. So I go back to playing the guitar. And when I'm playing the guitar, this song comes to me, man.
I stole her sunshine. Robbed her blind in the middle of the night. With a phone call bearing bad news, dreadful kind. The kind you never want your mother to hear, feel, and go through. Her worst fears and nightmares all in one.
That was Sky Boy, produced by Brian Mazza. What do you folks think about the story? Let's start with you, Joe.
You know, every time I listen to that story, it really gets to me. I've listened to it several times, and it still evokes the same reaction in me. Every time I hear Twins' voice crack up and the tears come, it just pulls that raw emotion out of me.
If it emotionally impacted the hobo, Joe Kirk, that's saying something.
Yeah, I'm kind of like a robot. I don't even think I cried when I was a baby.
It was your mom that was crying.
No, send this back. Oh, my God. What do you think, Spoon?
Twins' music remind me of Michael Fronte. And I remember when Michael Fronte came into New Folsom, he came in with some bare feet with his dreads hanging, and he looked like he's from the island, too. So he might have a little island in there.
Damon, bro, all this time I thought you were black. You're Tongan, so you know how the other Tongans in the community, how they reacted to this story?
Yeah, this story came out a few months ago, and when it came out, there's a very strong community in the Bay Area, Tongan community. I know firsthand that there are several gang members that are now reevaluating what it is to be a gang member and what it is to be a Tongan. Sometimes they misconstrue the two, and they think that tribalism exists on another level, particularly in America. They can all identify with the redemptive process. He spoke clearly about how his father felt when he committed the crime and how he had to redeem himself. And that is something that resonates even today in Tonga right now.
Yeah, she's speaking the truth. You can tell there's a lot of integrity in what he says. And he taught me something with his lyric from Heaven Please about the mother receiving that phone call bearing bad news, the dreadful kind. And it taught me how, you know, it gave me a little bit of insight on my own mom when she got them phone calls in the middle of the night. Your son's been shot or your son's been arrested. And it just made me really put myself in her shoes. And I started to understand better about what my family went through.
That shows the power of music and how it can heal the soul, how it can heal the victims and the victimizer and make the world better.
As simple as that, huh?
That was the first episode of Uncuffed. It was recorded and produced at Solano State Prison. In 2 weeks, we'll have a new story from San Quentin State Prison. To get it, subscribe to Uncuffed in any podcast player. You might hear extras that you don't hear on Cross Currents, like an extra music track from Skyboy. Today's Uncuffed episode was produced by Damon Cook, Steve Drown, Joe Kirk, Spoon Jackson, Brian Mazza, and Ryan Thames.
Pondering life, what's the purpose of life? I've been wondering, and I've been up all night on the drawing board trying to figure it out. Yeah, there's gotta be more, yeah, there's gotta be more. Pondering life, what's the purpose of life? I've been wondering, I've been up all night on the drawing board trying to figure it out. Yeah, there's gotta be more, yeah, there's gotta be more. There's gotta be, there's gotta be.
way more to life than what I see. Cause what I see is society is crumbling.
Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. Richmond community members get involved with regulating their own air quality.
So I don't know what's coming out those stacks. I just know when I get close to it, my eyes start burning.
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sona Avakian, Janae Darden, Christopher Agusa, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega-Welt, Jessica Plachik, Andrew Stelzer, and Eli Wortschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.